proud sponsor of Insight on Business, the News Hour, is AARP Iowa. With over 370,000 members, AARP is helping families with a host of programs, from Fraud Watch to helping build more livable communities. Learn more at aarp.org.
Welcome back. This is Insight on Business, the News Hour. Thanks so very much for clicking through. With me is United States Senate candidate. His name is Cal Woods. That name should sound familiar to those of you in central Iowa and soon all over the state of Iowa. He is a recently announced candidate for the United States Senate in a primary that will be happening in June. And so we're going to sit and talk about all kinds of things. First of all, let's learn a little bit about who is Cal Woods. Cal, welcome to the Business News
Michael,
Hour.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
So your name and your face should be relatively familiar to many, several gigs at newsrooms in Des Moines, yes?
At least people of a certain age. Now, I've been out of the business 11 years, so there's a lot of young folks who may have just attained the voting age who may not have a clue
right.
who I am. But occasionally I'll get recognized by, you know, people who are probably 30 or better. They'll say, hey, weren't you on the news? And I say, well, yeah, it was a long time ago, but good memory.
Yeah. And that adventure, and your last adventure, you were a news director, I think it was, at KDSM.
I was.
And that adventure then ended kind of abruptly in 2008, yes?
It was the recession of 2008, and normally in the news business, you live and die by the ratings.
Right.
We were having our best year ever. The February and the May are the important ratings periods, and then July, not so much. But we had just had our best ratings ever in each of those ratings periods. And shortly after the July book ratings came out, they announced they were going to shut down the newsroom.
Huh.
Our parent company was Sinclair Broadcast Group out of Baltimore, and I think the recession hit there a little earlier and a little harder, and they were looking to cut expenses wherever they could and outsource, and they couldn't outsource to China, so they outsourced us to the competition down the street. So WHO, about a month or so later, took over that newscast, and to their credit, they expanded it to an hour-long newscast at 9 p.m. Two different companies at the time, they had a joint operating agreement, and to my understanding, it's still two separate companies that they produce a newscast for the competition down the street at 9 o'clock and then do their own at 10 o'clock.
Yeah. And that then led you into some political work?
Well, it provided an opportunity. You know, I've always been interested in politics, and as a reporter, always enjoyed interviewing politicians because these are Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Libertarians, Greens, whatever. These are people who really care about their community. I didn't always agree with the folks, but they've taken some time to learn what makes a community work, a state, a nation work, and have some interesting ideas. And I love the respectful sparring that I would do with folks on either side. And I always took pride in asking the tough questions to folks on all sides. And generally, you get the best responses. So I would try to find the best sound bites from either side of an issue and give folks an opportunity to hear what folks who are interested in that are talking about.
And, you know, one of the downsides of broadcast news, wherever it happens to be, is the length of time that you have. You know, we're pretty fortunate here on the Business News Hour. We can take as long as we wish
right.
because we have transferred all of this from broadcast into podcast, which allows us that leeway.
Luxury.
Of time. Yeah, it is. It is kind of a luxury because you can dive deeper into some of the issues. Tell us about your political experience. You know, you left TV and opened up a business in real estate and fencing and stuff like that. And along the way, you were also doing some politics?
Well, when I left the news business, and it opened up an opportunity to volunteer on a number of campaigns because I care about my community, my state, my country, and I think that's an opportunity that we all have to give a little something back to our community or to our state. So I volunteered for Barack Obama in 2012. I was a precinct captain for Martin O'Malley in 2016. That didn't go so well.
He's a great guy, however.
He is a great guy, yeah. and that's part of the reason that I was knocking on doors for Martin O'Malley. I think he announced his departure from the campaign the night of the Iowa caucuses almost exactly four years ago. But it was still a great experience, and I had an opportunity to visit with Governor O'Malley on a couple of occasions and pick his brain a little bit. And it really was a wonderful opportunity. And then I also volunteered with Leonard Boswell's campaign.
Congressman Boswell.
And then when Stacey Apple ran, also I did some door knocking for Stacey Apple and some other candidates on down the ballot.
You know, you brought up the name Leonard Boswell. And for those who are clear with Iowa politics, Leonard was a congressperson in southwestern Iowa. And he was kind of a blue-dogged Democrat, they used to call him, but just a wonderfully warm and, I think, courageous individual. He and Dottie, just wonderful people. And how well did you get to know Congressman Boswell?
Well, I had an opportunity to make a trip to Cuba when Leonard Boswell and Patty Judge, when she was Secretary of Agriculture, and Leonard was the congressman representing this district, they led a trade mission down to Cuba back in 2003, so I got to know him a little bit then. And as the years went on, I would interview him periodically, and he was a really good guy. Yeah. And, you know, he's a Vietnam helicopter combat pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a class individual from a southern Iowa farm, and beloved by, I think, anybody who met him. You know, you may not agree with him politically, but it's hard not to like Leonard. He was a great guy.
Right. Leonard, so you take this trip to Cuba. What was that like?
Well, it was fascinating. And I had always had an interest in traveling to Cuba, and I'm glad I had an opportunity to go there when Fidel Castro was still president. It is still very much, well, at that time, in 2003, it was still very much Fidel's Cuba.
Right.
And I suspected that when Fidel moved on that it might change radically and become more of a tourist destination. I also thought by now that we would have normalized relations more.
Well, we kind of sort of did.
You know, we've dabbled with that.
Right. President Obama opened up some trade opportunities and some travel opportunities. And, of course, those were shut down after the 2016 election. And now even more sanctions are happening against Cuba as we speak. So,
well, you know, there's still a lot of people who are concerned about the socialist government and how we ought not to give them opportunities. When I went down there in 2003, there was limited trade permitted. For the most part, medical supplies and food that they would pay for in cash. Mm. So it was very limited in 2003. That would have been under the Bush administration. I think it was actually liberalized a little bit under the Clinton administration, and then we could continue to still do some trade with Cuba. But it was a fascinating opportunity. Cuban people are wonderful people, and I think with the trade embargo, we had given Fidel Castro an opportunity to blame us for the shortcomings that were really responsible because of socialism.
Mm.
That he had a convenient scapegoat in the United States and said, well, things are rough here because the dang United States won't trade with us.
Right.
So we were a convenient scapegoat.
So what, did you meet President Castro?
I did. Very briefly. We just happened to be standing at the elevator, and I thought, I probably won't have this opportunity again. So I just had a very brief conversation. But I was there as Leonard Boswell and Patty Judge and a contingent of about a dozen business folks, primarily from Iowa, but from a couple of other states.
And you were reporting on this?
I was a reporter at that time,
right.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, anything happened that was interesting?
Nothing out of the unusual, yeah. Except I know Blue Bunny had a representative there who was attempting to sell them ice cream.
Very nice.
And oddly enough, I think sold them a container of ice cream, like a semi-truckload of ice cream. And there was a number of other agricultural-related sales folks there who were selling distillers, dry grain, and I think chicken and various primarily agricultural products.
Fascinating. And I understand from what I've heard in the past that when Fidel would speak, he would speak at length. Is that pretty accurate?
Well, if you remember from throughout the 60s when he was a young man just having won the revolution and very much full of himself, he would speak for hours.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people were either there because they wanted to be or because they pretty much had to be in Revolution Square. And he would speak for 3 or 4 hours. So in this meeting we had at the Presidential Palace on a Sunday night, late on a Sunday night, it's probably 10 or 11 o'clock on a Sunday night, eating ice cream with Fidel Castro.
Of course, why not?
And a group of folks from Iowa. It's kind of a surreal moment. But he rattled on for probably 45 minutes about a number of things because he loved to hear himself talk. And finally, Congressman Boswell interrupted him and said, "Well, Mr. President, would you take a few questions?" So he said, "Yeah, sure." And so somebody from the group asked a question, and Castro took about 15 minutes to answer that one question. So it's hard to have a conversation with Fidel Castro. It's more likely to be a monologue.
A lecture.
Yes, exactly.
I understand. Cal Woods is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He is a candidate for the United States Senate. There will be a primary in June. All right, let's talk a little bit about your candidacy. Why? I mean, you got a successful business, you got things going on, and you wake up one day and you say, "Oh, I think I'll run for United States Senate." Well, not exactly that simple, I'm sure.
Right. Well, you know, as I said, I've always had an interest in politics and had an opportunity to, once I left the news business, to volunteer on a number of campaigns. And when this 2019 preview to the 2020 campaign came around, I was thinking, you know, Democrats have an opportunity to take back the United States Senate. And there's probably three or four or five states where Democrats could conceivably flip a seat. And it appeared that Iowa was one of them. Because generally a senator is most vulnerable in their freshman year, as Joni Ernst is, the junior senator from Iowa. And I think, well, who might be likely to take her on? Who can I support? I thought, well, you know, Tom Vilsack would be an obvious choice. Sally Peterson, Janet Peterson, Mike Gronstall, the former Senate majority. They would all be obvious choices, and I could all get behind their candidacy and support any of those folks. And none of those folks decided to run, and oddly enough, no one that's currently in the legislature decided to run. And so I thought, I looked around, and there are some issues that are critically important to me that I think are life or death issues, and I can't speak for the other candidates what their sense of urgency and immediacy and passion for making those changes is, but I know my own, and I think we've got life or death situations with our healthcare system, our climate crisis, and it is a crisis, and our financial system. We've added another $1 trillion to our national debt since that wonderful tax cut was passed in 2017. And our esteemed Secretary of the Treasury, Mr. Mnuchin, said if we pass this tax cut, it'll stimulate the economy so much, it'll pay for itself and start to pay down the national debt. And
what
since
happened?
Then, we've added another $1 trillion to our national debt. So I thought, I know what my sense of urgency, my passion for trying to make those changes are. I'm going to do this.
All right, let's talk about several of these issues. And we're going to do this, ladies and gentlemen, in two parts. So this is part one. You get to know who Cal Woods is. And then we're going to start down the list of several issues. Let's talk about climate change for just a moment. We're seeing raging wildfires in Australia. And I've heard news commentators suggest that that's a, and scientists say that that's a petri dish for what we can see in the rest of the world.
Well, we lost 87 folks in wildfires in California last year, the deadliest wildfires in California history. To my understanding, Australia has never had a wildfire like they're experiencing as we speak. I think they've already lost 27 or more Australians. And if the climate crisis is not obvious to everyone now, it soon will be. And if you've lost loved ones in Hurricane Katrina or Sandy or Andrew or Maria or any one of a number of other hurricanes, this is real. We lost our good friend Larry Kotler last 2018 right here in the metro to a flood in Urbandale of all places. And these tragedies are going to continue, and the sooner that we take action to deal with it, and we can, there are many things that we can do, a million things we can do, we'll probably need to do them all. But the sooner we take action, the more success we'll have in dealing with this crisis.
All right. Specifics. What do you think we should be doing?
Right. Well, first of all, we're at the highest level of carbon dioxide concentrations in our atmosphere that we've had in 800,000 years. For 800,000 years, our carbon dioxide levels varied from about 180 to 280 parts per million in our atmosphere. We're now at more than 400 parts per million. So things are not going to get better until we take significant action. Let's first phase out the $26 billion welfare check that we send to the gas, coal, and oil industry and phase in more research and development in renewable clean fuels. Iowa is a leader in wind turbine energy. I think we're number one in the amount of energy generated per square mile and number two or three in the nation in total energy generated from wind turbines. That's a great start. And I was driving down I-80 west of the metro a couple weeks ago, and there was, between here and Council Bluffs, there's probably, just that I could see from the interstate, probably another 12 or 15 wind turbines under construction. So we're a leader in wind energy. And solar, our friends up at Luther College in Decorah, have about a 250-kilowatt solar field that powers the 110-student Baker Housing Complex on the Luther campus. And sometimes they generate so much electricity at that solar field that they feed more energy back into the grid. That's an example of just the start of things that we can do. So if we... three gentlemen just won a Nobel Prize for their advancements in battery technology, lithium battery technology.
So storage has always
been an
issue.
Storage is a challenge, mm-hmm. but we're getting better at that all the time. We have electric cars. We had more electric trains 100 years ago than we do now. But most of the rest of the world, about 30% of their trains are electric-powered. Here in the United States, it's about 1%. Mm. There's a short line in northern Arizona that goes, oddly enough, from the coal mine to the power plant, but the railroad is powered by electricity. So it's our future, and it's clean and green. And even if people are in denial about our climate crisis, we lose 9 million people on this planet a year to respiratory illness. And the closer you live to a coal-fired power plant, the more likely you are to suffer from a respiratory illness. So even if you're in denial about that, let's become a healthier place.
His name is Cal Woods, ladies and gentlemen. He is running for the United States Senate in the state of Iowa. That is section one. We're going to come back. And when we do come back, and I urge you to click through, we're going to be talking about infrastructure and agriculture and jobs and a whole host of things to allow Cal to give you his look and his position on so many of these issues. Thanks, Cal.
Thank you, Michael.